They come. It was in the second year of the lean kine, on a day in the middle of Epiph, May by our reckoning, and frightfully hot, as it is anyhow in Egypt in their summer season, but even hotter than usual. The sun was like fire from heaven. We should have measured it at well over 100 degrees in the shade. The wind was blowing and driving the hot sand into the red-lidded eyes of the little people in Menfe's narrow streets. There were hosts of flies, and they and the human beings were alike sluggish. The rich would have given large sums for half an hour of a breeze from the northwest. They would even have been willing that the poor should benefit as well. Joseph, too, the king's first mouthpiece, had a perspiring face caked with sand. But as he went home at noon from his office, he seemed to be in high spirits and very lively, if the word be applicable to a man born in state in a litter. Followed by the equipages of some of his upper officials who were to lunch with him, according to a custom which the vice-god even today did not fail to observe, he soon turned off from the wide boulevard and was carried through some of the mean alleys of the poorer quarters, where he was hailed with cordial and confident familiarity. "Jepnudif onich!" the little lean-ribbed one shouted, throwing kisses. "Happy! Happy! 10,000 years to you, our provider, beyond the end of your destiny!" And they who would simply be rolled in a mat when they were taken out to the desert wished him 4 excellent jugs for your entrails, and for your mummy, an alabaster coffin. Such was the form their sympathy took, in response to his for them. At length the litter bore him through the painted gate in the wall of his gracious villa into the front garden, where olive, pepper, and fig trees, the shadowy cypress and the spreading fan-like palm were grouped about the gay papyrus columns of the terrace before the house, and mirrored in the square, walled-in lotus pool. A broad graveled drive ran round the pond. The bearers followed it and came to a halt, whereupon the runners offered Joseph knee and neck, so that he stepped first upon them and then to the ground. My Sakme was quietly awaiting him on the terrace, or rather at the top of the flight of steps at one side, as were Hapi and Hazes, 2 greyhounds from Punt, most aristocratic beasts, in gold collars, a quiver with nerves. Pharaoh's friend sprang up the shallow steps more precipitately than usual, indeed more briskly than an Egyptian noble should move before spectators. He did not look at his retinue. "My," said he hurriedly in a low tone as he patted the animals' heads, and they put their forepaws on his chest to greet him, "I must talk to you at once, alone. Come into my room. Let them wait. There is no hurry about the meal, and I could not eat a mouthful. This is much more pressing business, about the roll here in my hand. Or rather, the roll is about the pressing business. I will explain it all to you if you will come with me where we can be alone." "But steady," expostulated my Sakme. "What is the matter with you, Adon? You are shaking, and I am sorry to hear you cannot eat, you who make so many to eat. Will you not have water poured to cleanse your sweat? It is not good to let it dry in the pores and hollows of the body. It itches and inflames, especially when mixed with grit." "I'll do that later, Mai. Washing and eating are not urgent, by comparison. For you must hear at once what I have heard. The roll here tells me that was brought to my office just before I left. And here it is. It has come. I mean, they have come, which is the same thing. And the question is, what will happen, and how am I to receive them? And what shall I do, for I am fearfully excited?" "Why, Adon, just be calm. You say it has come. That means you expected it, and what you were expecting cannot surprise you. Kindly tell me what is or who are come, then I will prove to you that there is no reason to be upset. On the contrary, calmness is the one thing needful." They were talking as they went through the peristyle to the fountain court, moving with a rapid gait which the man of poise tried to slow down. But Joseph turned, and my Sakme followed with Hapi and Hazes, into a room on the right, with a colored ceiling, a malachite lintel, and gay friezes along the walls. It served him as a library, and lay between his sleeping chamber and the great reception hall. It was furnished with true Egyptian charm. There was an inlaid daybed covered with skins and cushions, delightful little carved chests on legs, inlaid and inscribed, for the protection of the book rolls, lion-footed chairs with rush seats and backs of stamped and gilded leather, flower stands and tables with faience vases and vessels of iridescent glass. Joseph squeezed his steward's arm as he balanced up and down on the balls of his feet. His eyes were wet. "My," he cried, and there was something like suppressed exultation, a choked-off rapture in his voice. "They are coming. They are here. They have passed the fortress of Fell. I knew it. I have been waiting for it, and yet I can't believe it has come. My heart is in my mouth. I am so excited that I don't know where I am." "Be so good, Adon, as to stop dancing up and down in front of me. I am a man of peace and quiet. Pray make it clear to me who has come."
"My brothers, my brothers," Joseph cried, and bounced up and down the moor.
"Your brothers? The ones who rent your garments and threw you into the well and sold you into slavery?" asked the captain, who had long since learned the whole story by heart.
"Yes, yes, to whom I owe all my good luck and my glory down here."
"But, Adon, that is certainly putting things too much in their favor."
"God has put it that way, O my steward. God has turned all to good, to everyone's good, and we must look at the results which he had in mind. Before we could see how it turned out, and had only the fact but not the result, I agree that it had a bad look. But now we must judge the fact according to the result."
"That is a question after all, my good lord. Imhotep the wise might have had a different view, and they showed your father the blood of an animal for yours."
"Yes, that was beastly. He must certainly have fallen on his back, but that probably had to be, because things could not go on as they were. For my father, great-hearted and soft-hearted as he was, and then I myself, what a young peacock I was in those days, a regular young cock of the walk, full of really vicious vanity and self-importance. It is a shame how long some people take to grow up, even supposing I am grown up even now. Perhaps it takes you your whole life to grow up."
"It may be, Adon, that there is still a good deal of the boy about you. So you are convinced it is really your brothers?"
"Convinced? There cannot be the slightest doubt. Why else did I give such strict orders for records and reports? All that was not for nothing, be sure. And as for giving Manasseh, my eldest, the name I gave him, that was just for form's sake. I have not forgotten my father's house. Oh, not in the very least. I have thought of it daily, hourly, all these years, and how I promised my little brother Ben in the hiding place of the mangled one that I would have them all come after me when I had been lifted up and had the power of binding and loosing. Convinced? Here, look, it is written down. It came by running messenger and is a day or so ahead of them. The sons of Jacob, son of Yitzhak, from the grove of Mamre, which is at Hebron, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, and so on, to buy corn. And you talk as though there were any doubt. It is the brothers, all 10 of them. They entered with a troop of buyers. The scribes never dreamed when they wrote it down. Nor did they. They have not the least idea before whom they will be brought, nor who it is sells in the king's name as his first mouthpiece.
My... If you only knew how I feel. But I do not know myself. It is all tohu and bohu within me, if you know what that means. And yet I knew and have been expecting it for years.
I knew when I stood before Pharaoh and when I interpreted to him, I was doing it to myself too, reading the purposes of God and how he guides our history.
What a history, my, is this we are in, one of the very best. And now it depends on us. It is our affair to give it a fine form and make something perfectly beautiful of it, putting all our wits at the service of God. How shall we begin, in order to do justice to such a story? That is what excites me so much. Do you think they will recognize me?
How should I know, Adon? No, I should think not. You are considerably matured since the time they pulled you to pieces. And anyhow, they could never dream of such a thing, and that will make them blind, so they will never think of it or even trust their own eyes. To recognize and to know that you recognize are two very different things.
Right, right. But I fear they will. I fear it so much that my heart is pounding in my chest.
You mean you do not want them to?
Not first off, my. Not on any account. They must only grasp it by degrees. The thing must draw itself out before I speak the words and say, I am I. In the first place, that is required for the shaping and adorning of the tale. And secondly, there is so much to be gone through and so many tests to make, and there will be a great deal of beating about the bush. First of all, in the business about Benjamin.
Is Benjamin with them?
That is just the thing of it. He is not. I tell you, there are 10, not 11 of them, and we are 12 altogether. It is the red-eyed ones and the sons of the maids, but not my mother's son, not the little one. Do you know what that means? You are so calm, your wits move slowly. Ben not being here might mean one of two things. It may mean, I hope it does, that my father is still alive. Think of it, that he still lives, that old, old man, and keeps guard over his youngest, so that he forbade him the journey and did not want him to take it for fear harm might come. His Rachel died on a journey. I died on a journey. Why should he not be prejudiced against them and keep at home with him the last pledge of his lovely one? This may be the meaning, but it might mean, too, that he is gone, my father, and that they have behaved badly to Ben because he is alone and unprotected, and thrust him out as though he were not their brother, and would not let him come with them because he is a son of the true wife. Poor little soul.
You keep calling him little, Adon. You do not take into account that he must have grown up, too, in the meantime, this only real brother of yours. When you think of it, he must be a man in the prime of life.
Quite right. It is quite possible. But he remains the youngest, my friend. The youngest of 12. Why should I not call him the little one? And there is always something sweet about the youngest in the family. All over the world, the youngest is the favorite and leads a charmed life. It is almost as much in the picture for the older ones to conspire against him.
Hearing your story, my lord, it almost seems as though you had been the youngest.
Just so, just so. I will not deny it. There may be some truth in what you say. Maybe history here repeats itself with a difference. But it is on my conscience. I'm determined the little one shall have his due as the youngest. And if the 10 have thrust him out or treated him badly, if they have played fast and loose, which I do not like to think, as they did with me, then may the Elohim have mercy on them, for they will come up against me. I will not reveal myself to them at all. The beautiful speech to tell them who I am will just not be made. If they recognize me, I will deny it and say, No, I am not he, ye evildoers. And they will find in me only a harsh and stranger judge. There, you see, Adon, now you put on a different face and sing a new tune. No more sentimental tenderness in your heart. You are remembering how they played fast and loose with you, and you seem perfectly able to distinguish between the fact and the result. I don't know, my, what sort of man I am. One does not know beforehand how one will behave in one story, but when the time comes, it is clear enough, and then a man gets acquainted with himself. I am curious myself to see how I shall act and how talk to them. At this moment I have no idea. That is what makes me tremble so. When I had to stand before Pharaoh, I was not a thousandth part so excited. And yet, they are my own brothers. But that is just it. Everything is upside down inside me. It is a perfect muddle of joy and dread and suspense and quite indescribable, just as I tell you. How startled I was when I came to the names on the list. Though I had known and definitely expected to see them, you cannot imagine it. Of course not, because you cannot be startled. Was I startled on their account, or on my own? I do not know. But they would have good ground to be startled themselves, to be frightened down to the very soles of their shoes. I do not deny that. For it was no small thing then, and long ago as it all was, it has not got any smaller with the years. I said I went to them to see that everything was in order. That was cheeky, I agree. I admit it all, especially that I ought not to have told them my dreams. Besides, it is true that if they had granted me my life, I would have told the whole thing to my father. So they had to leave me where I was.
and still and all, that they were deaf when I cried out of the depths, lying there in my bonds, covered with welts, and wailed and begged them not to do this to my father, to let me perish in the hole and show him the blood of a beast for mine. Yes, my friend, it was all pretty bad. Not so much to me, I'm not talking about that. It was bad towards my father. If he is dead now of his grief, and has gone down in sorrow to Sheol, shall I be able to be friendly to them? I do not know. I do not know how I am under such conditions, but I very much fear I could not be friendly. If they have brought down his gray hairs with sorrow to the grave, that also would belong to the result, my, even first and foremost, and would very much obscure the light shed by the result upon the fact. In any case, it remains a fact, and it must be set over against the result, eye to eye with it, so that, confronted by its goodness, it may be ashamed of its badness.